So the story is very much about people observing each other, people being looked at from a distance, seeing things you were not supposed to see, and also hearing things. I really like this idea that the reader becomes her closest friend in a way, or that the reader is like her imaginary friend. And this imaginary friend is maybe the ghost of her childhood, because the story is about letting go.
In part two of Voices from the Interior World, The Ghost of Childhood, we visit with Kristen Vago, whose work appears in the 50th issue of the Asymptote Journal. Kristen Vago quotes both poet Walter de la Mare and Virginia Woolf in her newly translated story. Like de la Mare, she suggests that we must look our last upon all things lovely. A story reckoning with the ghost of childhood, where a young woman witnesses betrayal even as she leans into adulthood during a summer holiday in a Nordic landscape. Norwegian authors are top of mind, like Jan Fosse, who was awarded the Nobel Prize for Literature. Quoting the committee, "His is the ability to say the unsayable." This can be said also of today's featured writer. My name is Vincent Hostack, and this is the Asymptote Podcast. Kristen Vago is a Danish-Norwegian writer based in Oslo. Born in Denmark, Vago publishes in both languages. Her debut short story collection is Look Your Last on All Things Lovely. Vago's eponymous story debuts in an English translation by Jennifer Russell in the January 2024 issue of the Asymptote Journal. Russell's translations have been featured in The Paris Review, Kranta, and Asymptote. We discuss Kristen's writing process and the translation of her work, All Things Lovely. Kristen Vago, thank you so much for making time to join us from Oslo.
Thank you for having me.
Reading your story, All Things Lovely, I was struck by the rich detail of the world around Julie, including all the awkwardness of being an adolescent. This story takes place principally over a summer holiday, while she is reckoning with her own emergence into maturity. And the voice given to her is one I think of when I think of an individual becoming increasingly self-aware. She's intelligent, intentionally chooses a book to read, which is not from the young adult section of the library. Early in the story, we read in the third person voice a single line, kind of summarizing this thought. She felt out of place, an unease in her body over not being part of, but also not entirely apart from the adult's company. Kristen, I wonder if you might introduce us to Julia and this sense of being both out of place and part of the experience of others.
Yes. Julia is a 14-year-old girl, and she was a really interesting character for me to write because I usually don't write about that age. I write about young adults. My short story collection is all about women in their 20s. But then I wrote this story about a 14-year-old girl, and she's on summer vacation with her mother and her mother's best friend and her mother's boyfriend, which is a kind of strange constellation. I think it would be very different for her if she was on vacation with both her parents, or maybe with her father and his girlfriend, which is hinted at their relationship might be a bit more grounded or has lasted longer. So the mother's boyfriend is a fairly new presence. The mother's friend, of course, Julia, has known her entire life, her mother's best friend. But she is sort of in the company of these adults, and she finds herself spending a lot of time on her own. So she's sort of wandering around the forest and the area around this cabin. She's not a child, so that the grown-ups are not really worried about where she is, but she's also not an adult that takes part in the conversation. But what happens is she overhears conversations about herself. So the story is very much about people observing each other, people being looked at from a distance, seeing things you were not supposed to see, and also hearing things. And I think this is something that marks her age. This is also the summer where she has her first period. So she is transitioning into a young woman. She has started to take an interest in what's going on in the grown-ups' lives. So she's maybe listening in a bit more in their conversations. And what she hears is that they're talking about her and her becoming, why doesn't she have a boyfriend, or why is she spending so much time at home? So she's becoming aware that there are some expectations about how she should transform into a teenager and not stay a child. So that's some of the things that's going on in her body and in her mind this few couple of days that we spend with her in the cabin on this summer holiday.
There's a very interesting timeline. Mm-hmm. We move from those moments, the core of the story, to a recollection of that time. Mm-hmm. My experience is that I make an emotional connection with Julie. I feel like I'm witnessing very intimate moments that she's not expressing with anyone else. And that's in, I suppose, an interior dialogue. In a way, it's as though we become one of her closest friends. And I'll tell you, it's a mystery to me how this happens. I think this is just some of the magic in your storytelling technique. Can you tell me a bit about your approach to writing character?
I really like this idea that the reader becomes her closest friend in a way, or that the reader is like her imaginary friend. And this imaginary friend is maybe the ghost of her childhood, because the story is about letting go. And she does come across as maybe a slightly lonely character. There are no references to her best friends at home, for example. So after this summer is done and something has changed, she comes back. That's when she starts drinking alcohol, hanging out with boys, spending time on the beach, skinny dipping with the other kids. So she moves into a new phase, and that's really the only time where the story mentions other kids her age. But the time that we spend with her, she seems, the reader or the imaginary friend might be closest to her. For me, when I write, character is strangely not where I start. It's not the first important thing for me when I write a story. The most important thing for me is setting, atmosphere, and structure or composition. So everything for me starts with a place. And particularly this short story has it comes from a real place that I know very intimately. And the atmosphere arrives from placing these characters in this space. I write about feeling, I think. You know, I'm not too interested in their backstory, but particularly I'm not too interested in exactly where they live, what is their address, all of these details. I'm interested in how they experience betrayal and jealousy and sexual awakening and all of these things. And this story is the title story in my book. It's also the longest story, which was really wonderful. It gave me more space to work with these people, because I have four people, which is more than I usually have. I have Julia and her mother and the male character, mother's boyfriend, and then the mother's best friend. And in the other stories in my book, I have written about female friendship a lot, and sexuality, and being in relationships and breakups and all of these things. In this story, all of the same themes are here, but it's being observed by Julia. So the female friendship is not between Julia and her friends, it's between her mother and her mother's friends, and she's sort of seeing it from the outside. And the same goes with sexuality and being in relationships. It's something that she sees almost like it's something on a stage. She observes the grown-ups be confused and betray each other and be quite mean to each other in some ways, in little ways that is difficult for her to put into language, but she knows how it affects her. So she gets a feeling in her body, which I think is the same feeling the reader gets. Something is not right, or something is uncomfortable. And this is sort of her introduction into adulthood. What does it mean to be a grown up in different relationships with other women? So Julia, for me, she sums up, in a way, the young adult female protagonists from the other stories in my book, because she is experiencing all of this for the first time. And then, of course, there's the flash forward at the end where we meet her, when she is, in fact, grown up and she has a young child. And we understand that the way she feels about herself, about her ex, who she's no longer in a relationship with, the father of her child, but they work together around the child. Her relationship to herself as a mother and her relationship to her own mother when she's a grown-up. What we see in the end is that all of this is really affected by what happened when she was an adolescent. Something is planted in her from that time where she had to give up the joy and beauty and innocence of childhood and had to move into this more brutal world of the adults. And the way her relationship to her mother at that point informs how she feels about herself when she is closer to her mother's age, if that makes sense.
It does indeed. And I should just mention, I very much like the Julia of the flash forward. Mm-hmm. She seems to have establish some comfort of who she is and where she is, regardless of the difficulties that are roundly addressed in the story. You also mentioned that it doesn't really start with character, but with a sense of place. And in that place, we are treated to a great many sensory details, mediated largely through Julia. And it seems that her, or perhaps your senses are heightened, having experienced this place, the smells. There's the moment where one of the characters is removing dead green insects from a windowsill. And knowing that imparting the sensory experience of the characters is such an important part of telling a story, was any of this challenging in the English translation? And how involved might you have been with that translation?
Jennifer Russell, who translated it, is really, really an excellent translator. And we did send the document back and forth a few times. There were a few things. One, of course, is there are some words which are very specific to the geography of this place. So really, it's inspired by a location in the south of Norway. But in the story setting, we're in the south of Sweden. And the reason for this is I wanted the family from Denmark to drive in a car and for them to drive all the way through Sweden back down to the south of Norway. That's too long. You would have to take a ferry. So I moved the cabin just across the water. So it's set in Sweden, but a lot of the geography is quite similar. So there were certain words. Jennifer describes it as what does she say? Sloping rocks, I think. The sloping rocks that are on the shore, which has a very specific name. And I think they are only found in this region, in the south of Sweden, the south of Norway. We certainly don't have them in Denmark. And there's the fjord and fjell and all of these very specific things. So that was just one small part of the translation. She had to find the right way of describing what does this landscape actually look like if you don't have the specific Norwegian words for it. And another thing I know she worked on in the translation was to do with grammatical tense. So past, present tense, that kind of detail, because it's different. It's used a bit differently in the Scandinavian languages and in English. But when it comes to the detail, the sensory detail, my main aim when I write, when I have worked for years to try and find my voice, what I landed at is I want my voice to be as clear as possible. I want my sentences to be as simple as possible, which is one of the reasons I like writing in Norwegian. So I'm Danish is my first language. I write first in Danish and then I rewrite into Norwegian. And in Norwegian, you can skip a few of the smaller grammatical words that you skip in spoken language. In the Danish written language, you have to have more of these smaller words. In English, I found when I read Jennifer's translation, you can simplify the sentences even more. So I know that she worked a lot on getting the rhythm right, and she worked on getting the simplicity into the sentences, which I really love. So it fits the tone really well, the English translation. And for me, as I said, atmosphere, place, tone, all of these things are almost most important to me. To get the atmosphere right, I want the reader to have a sensory visual experience and also to feel and think, to see the little green insects with paper thin wings and not be distracted by a poetic metaphor describing these insects.
So thank you for that. So there's a I'll call it a surprising way that characters' experiences are inferred and experienced in the story. Later in the story, as we flash forward, she listened to a science fiction radio play that was written by Rose. And in that, she's making connections about the summer holiday retrospectively and her life at that particular moment. And takes time to reflect on that. And in fact, the title of your story comes from the fictional play's title. Can you tell us how you came to use this device?
Because the story is longer and because it was the last one I finished for my book, I wanted to test out some techniques. I wanted to do something fun and see if I could pull it off because I felt like I had gathered some experience working on the other stories. So there are nine stories in the collection, and this is the last one. So that was one of the things I wanted to work with, this flash forward in time, going back and forth in time. And I wanted to work with this play within a play. To me, the play really just is what is on the page. So it's those few spoken lines and a small sketch of what takes place. So it's a play about betrayal. It's a play about three characters. Two are left for dead in outer space. And Julia reacts to the storyline in a way that makes her listen when they are announcing who wrote the play. And then she's not surprised to hear that it was written by her mother's friend. What I like about having this story within a story is it allows for a slightly open ending to the story. We are never told exactly what did happen on that summer trip or what happened immediately after the trip, but it's hinted at quite heavily, I think. I think the reader will certainly understand what Julia is thinking happened. It's very much about, as I said before, observing or overhearing something you shouldn't hear or see, and having a gut feeling, you know, having a reaction that tells you what is happening, but you don't actually have proof. The small radio play, it exposes a guilt in Rose, the mother's friend. The play is written from the or it's told, the final monologue in this radio play is told by the woman who was betrayed and who then avenges herself. So really, this woman, Rose, is telling the story of Julia's mother. I think this is one of the reasons why the play affects the grown-up Julia when she hears it, because it's almost like an admittance from Rose, but in the form of art. And of course, Rose doesn't know that Julia has ever heard this radio play. The final thing is, I needed at this point, I didn't have a title for my book, for the collection. I didn't have a title for this story, and I didn't have a title for the radio play. So I needed three titles, and I'm very bad with titles. So when I found this quote from Virginia Woolf's diary, she's quoting someone else. She's quoting a poet, "Look your last on all things lovely." When I found that sentence, I knew that it would work for all three, for the radio play and the title story and the title of the book, because it conveys so much of what is in this story. The melancholy looking back, but also the beauty and some kind of strength. So it's a strange title, but it sort of holds all of these things, I found.
There's a certain amount of mystery in it. I hope we've left enough mystery for the reader. I do urge our listeners to read this first English language translation, your only English language translation. Is that correct?
Yes.
What a treat that is to have it in the new issue. I think our listeners would enjoy hearing a few paragraphs from the story. And again, while I urge our listeners to read it in the journal, might you read a section to set the stage for readers?
Mm-hmm. So this is fairly early in the story. I should say first, they have spent the first day at this cabin, and Julia has been feeling some pain, which we find out later is she's having her first period. The next day they went to the beach. Already early in the morning, they could tell it was going to be warm. Julia had woken up and felt the fist still pressing against her pubic bone. It was the first thing she registered when she opened her eyes. A light fog lay across the trees in the valley. It would be burned away as soon as the sun took hold. The birds that had awoken them with their lively commotion at the break of dawn were quiet when they walked down the path to the beach. The water was cold and clear. Pleasant, probably, once you were in. Julia held up her dress with one hand. She had waded in up to her knees. Her swimsuit was in the tote bag on the beach. She had forgotten to change before they left. As soon as they got to the water, Mama and Rose had pulled their dresses over their heads and run into the sea. They were wearing their swimming costumes underneath. Julia could see them as two small dots out on the pier. They jumped into the water and climbed back out, jumped in and climbed out. Sometimes they would swim out to the floating raft in the middle of the fjord and lean back with outstretched arms, their legs dangling in the water and faces tilted towards the sun. Jon was sitting on a towel on the beach. Julia went back up and sat down next to him, took out her book. "Aren't you going in?" she asked. "I don't swim." "Why not?" He lifted a hand and stretched out five weathered fingers. "Nerve damage," he said.
That was lovely. And our listeners will simply have to read the rest in the current issue of the Asymptote Journal. Kristen Vega, thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast.
Thank you.
The Asymptote Podcast is produced by me, Vincent Hostack. We heard music from Bungalow Bed and Isobel O'Connor, courtesy of Epidemic Sound. My very special thanks to author Kristen Vega and translator Jennifer Russell. Also, Thanks to the editorial staff of the Asymptote Journal. To enjoy the work of these authors, as well as many others, visit asymptotejournal.com, the premier site for world literature in translation. Until next time, goodbye.